and welcome to Counterpressed on The Ringer and Spotify. I'm with Jesse Parker Humphreys and Becky Taylor Gill. Guys, since I last saw you, I am an earthquake survivor.
Wow.
Fucking hell.
I know. I've been through a lot. But
was tell it us, scary?
No, tell us, Flo, what you thought was happening.
So I thought it was just a really loud washing machine upstairs. You know, people know what I mean. You know when your neighbour is doing a
this
load of washing.
This is pure Londoner take, I think.
Yeah, you know when you're, you know when someone in the flat above you or something is doing a really loud wash and the spin is like, and you can hear it through the ceiling and you're like, oh, next night, upstairs are doing a wash, right? I thought it was just like the world's loudest iconic washing machine, even though in New York where I am, most people's washing machines are in the basement. So I don't know why I thought it would be shaking the whole building, but it was mad because, yeah, the whole building literally did go like woof, 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 like side to side. It was really strange.
Oh, that's nothing. I used to live in the top floor of a flat in Liverpool, like right on the water, and the wind would make it shake like that. Go over it, man.
Actually, all the time.
Yeah, it would like sway in the wind.
Oh my God, no, no, I would not like that.
No.
If it was fine, but if it was really windy, it could make you a bit seasick.
Oh God. That sounds really dangerous.
No, they're meant to do it.
Okay.
I remember being terrified. I think it might be the Science Museum has it or something.
Yes.
Where they recreate the Japanese earthquake.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you go in the thing and it shakes. I remember going as a child. I'm sure now I would be like, whatever. But I was really scared by it.
Well, we were saying
National History Museum. I went in it recently.
Oh, it's history,
with my
not science.
Little
okay.
siblings, yeah.
Well, we were saying it was exactly like that. Like that was the main recall we had, was to remember that experience in the Natural History Museum. And then there was an aftershock about 7 hours later, which was the same thing, but like 2 seconds rather than 10 seconds. And in true fashion, it was all anyone talked about for a whole day. It was like, where were you when the earthquake happened today? Yeah, come on.
Honestly.
It's a seminal event. So that is...
You're getting all of the natural... You've got the earthquake, the solar eclipse.
I know. I've gone to New York in the wrong week. I'm literally there in 2 days' time and I've missed out on all the cool stuff.
You miss out on the iconic moments. But you will be there... Well, you'll be on the East Coast, Jesse, doing the Boston Marathon. A huge moment.
Yeah, I'm excited. I can't wait. I'm actually really freaking out because I've checked the weather and it is going to be 20 degrees and sunny.
Really?
Which, having trained in basically 10 degree weather for the past 4 months, I think could go really wrong. But I remember I worried about this for London last year and then it poured with rain.
You did.
So.
You did. I'm hoping for rain for you then.
Fingers crossed.
Is there a way that we can track you?
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be an app. I can send everyone my number so you can find me.
I was really
me.
Excited about that last time, but then it didn't work. And I was like genuinely worried that you, like, something had happened because it like pulled up. You were like somewhere around, like just after Greenwich. And I was like, oh my God, like what's happened to Jesse? They're not moving. But it was just the tracker.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed. I mean, it should be on telly as well. So you might be able to spot me.
Oh my God. I will be looking out for you.
I didn't realise they broadcast it. That'll be fun. And I feel
it
like
is the world's most famous marathon.
Yeah, it is. It is. But I meant...
Are you excited?
I meant in the UK, but...
I am excited. I think I have done the classic thing where I feel a bit rubbish because I feel like I should have trained better. But I'm trying to reframe it as like it's an incredible privilege to get to go and run a very famous marathon. And so I think I'm just going to enjoy it, especially if it's hot as well. The weather being bad kind of makes me feel like, oh, like it's good you didn't train much because you'd be really annoyed if you trained loads and then your training went to shit. I saw they'd put a statue of a famous dog who watches the marathon every year on the course.
Oh my
gosh. I'm gonna tempted to just get a photo with that, to be honest.
Oh, that's cute.
Is the real dog still alive?
I'm not sure. Unclear. Let us know if you know.
Need some Googling. And Jesse, do you know, like, we'll ask Jilly, but do you know what the latest is on Jilly's marathon training?
I actually haven't heard any more from Jilly since. So she ran for an hour and 40 minutes.
Wow, good for her.
And then I haven't heard anything since. So she has an extra week on me, obviously.
Did she survive the run?
I don't know. Is anyone? No, because someone bumped into her at Bermondsey tube station, didn't they?
Oh, yes.
True.
Of course, yeah.
Well, we'll check in the group chat. We'll check in the Count and Price group chat to see how she's doing. And there obviously is the caveat that she might end up working the Champions League game and not having to do it, which obviously we know that we think everyone's secretly hoping for. But she's been putting the miles in. She got her trainers. The Jessie Park Humphreys training program is starting to take shape. So you never know, but we will do. I know lots of people are wondering. We will do a Jilly Flatty marathon check-in at some point. And we will obviously post Jilly's number if she does do it so that people can track her, because she's going to need everyone's support. It's marathon season. I can't believe 2 out of 5 Counter Price members are marathon runners.
Yeah, when are you guys doing marathons?
Never.
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 I can do a half, but a full one, absolutely not. That is so long.
Kate's sister is a very speedy marathon runner.
Very true, actually. I did know that.
I reckon Kate Longhurst could
Kate's
do a
next.
Quick one.
Also, yeah, she's the professional athlete, not me and Flo, so she can go next.
We're tapping out. On today's show, we're going to be talking about England's Euro qualifier against Sweden at Wembley from last week. We're also going to talk about the She Believes Cup. Does she believe yet, Becky? Do we know?
I believe. I don't know about her. But me, I find myself believing.
Becky believes. Okay, good to know. And we're going to talk about the NCAA Women's Championship game, because we're all basketball fans now. We're fair weather basketball fans, but we're going to touch in on that game that happened on Sunday. So let's get into it after this. Jessie, you were at Wembley. It was a Parker Humphreys sibling fiesta. Before we get into what was quite a dry game, I want the Wembley vibe check, because I've noticed watching on the TV, the top tier wasn't open, right? So it was a sort of like, what, 60,000 tickets I think they sold in the end? And yeah, what was the general vibe? It looked like Box Park was extremely busy. Give us the rundown of Wembley on Friday night.
Yeah, well, Box Park was popping. I saw every kind of lesbian you could ever see.
As always.
All shapes and sizes.
What you expect from Box Park. Had a lovely time. Drinks with the Twitter oomphs, as well as obviously the Sibs. And I was just vibing. I think it's very rare I go to games now where I'm like doing absolutely no kind of work. So it was nice to like chill out, not have to head off early, and also like not really care about the game either. Like, I was like, this is great. And then I thought Wembley was good vibes. Like, it obviously wasn't full, but I still kind of thought like 60,000, it feels pretty bonkers. Again, for a game where I was like, nah, Euro qualifiers, like, I know it's like a big team. And I guess maybe we can talk about like whether we think there are any implications from the result. But yeah, I had a really, really good night out.
You say not a massively important game, but it did make me feel a little bit nervy for these qualifiers, because we had the sort of like group of death reaction and then a sort of actual realization, nah, they should get through. Two teams get through from a group, so that helps. But this performance, I think, was maybe creeping in some of that pre-World Cup England Serena Wiegman energy, where it's a little bit tired, it's a little bit disjointed, defensively not looking amazing. And it just was making him a little bit nervy about how tough this qualification period could be. And that was my only sort of, because normally I watch these qualifiers, I'm like, I'm bored, but it doesn't feel like there's much jeopardy. So I'm kind of willing to just be bored for the sake of, you know, it reaching its natural conclusion. But this one, it was like, I'm bored and I'm a bit worried, but I don't know if I'm not saying I'm really worried, because I think that's maybe a bit dramatic, but I'm a little bit worried.
It's a weird one, isn't it? Because I think firstly, international breaks, it's always very easy to like react to exactly the game that was just in front of you, because you don't get that sort of like weekly understanding of like how good a team is. And my main reaction to this game was that I didn't think England were particularly good. But then it's funny because the last international breaks we had, the friendlies, I did think England were really good. And they scored loads of goals against teams who are like decent, albeit not as good as maybe Sweden or France are. I think my main concern about the Euros qualifiers, and also I think what makes it quite hard to judge England's performance, is lots of players are really tired. Like they're in the middle of the season for loads of them. There's like really important games coming up. You know, you think of all the Chelsea and City players in the England squad who know that they're just like every game is basically like a cup final in that kind of cliched way from here to the end of the season. The problem is that all of England's qualifiers are kind of going to come within that context when you look at the June and July windows. The other thing that I think will be interesting about this group, just moving away a little bit from England's performance per se, is how other teams take points off each other. And I thought it was interesting that the France Republic of Ireland game was quite tight. And I think that kind of just shows that maybe, not that England's performance like isn't something to like discuss or worry about, but there are going to be more, because it's a group of death, there are going to be more twists and turns across all the games, as opposed to needing to make sure you win everything, because otherwise like one team's going to catch you.
Yeah, 100%. Becky, you weren't at Box Park in a shocking twist of events.
I know. I don't like hearing about Box Park popping off when I wasn't there. But I do think the game then justified my unwillingness to travel all the way to Wembley to watch it, because it was dull.
We need like that dog statue at the Boston Marathon. We need one of you in Wembley Box Park so you'll never miss a moment.
please. I did miss Wembley, and I did, when I saw like obviously lesbian TikTok, everyone was at Box Park, and I was like, damn it. But it was dull, guys. It was dull.
Yeah, it wasn't a classic. And yeah, totally agree with you, Jesse, that there, I think, you know, the assumption would be that this game in Dublin on Tuesday will be where England can kind of sort of assert themselves in the group a little bit and get a win that sets them on a good path. But I think this group in general, it could get a little bit tense, a little bit nervy, but I think Tuesday night might be the one where you reset and kind of build from there. But it shows that depth as well across everywhere, that these games are going to be as tight as they are. Let's get into a little bit more of England's performance. Alyssa Russo, nice assist from Lauren James for the header. But I don't felt like England created enough chances really with the possession that they did have. It was a little bit scrappy, just the rhythm and flow wasn't there. And some of that was Serena Vibman sort of rotated in game with Lauren James starting out on the left, Lauren Hemp on the right. Then they swapped halfway. We saw other players come on in the second half, a fairly-ish quiet performance from Grace Clinton as well. She's been obviously such a key part of the sort of 2024 Wiegmann England. But the discourse that really got people going, Jesse, was Kira Walsh discourse that I think sent people into a bit of a head spin. But there was a lot of discussion about obviously how teams since the Euros really have tried to shut down Kira Walsh and her effectiveness and how she tries to control games and put pressure on England that way. For me, I feel like that's been happening for so long now that England have kind of guarded against it, and it hasn't, like, obviously she's not the sort of magical puppet master that she was during that Euros championship. I still think she, you know, is an immensely talented player, but she can't really play that role anymore because of the pressure that's put on her. But she does have a great network of players around her that ease the pressure of, that she can play with. But I didn't quite understand this kind of huge Kira Walsh crisis moment. Did you, Jesse?
No, I don't think Walsh had a great game, and I don't think Stanway had a great game either. And obviously that's naturally going to create problems for any team if you don't have a consistent midfield. I was less confused about the midfield, because I think naturally that still kind of picks itself for England and you can kind of excuse the poor game. I still don't really understand sort of the rotations and the ideas ahead of it. And I feel like obviously we've seen Clinton come in and play as the 10 a lot in this season. And then we had sort of LJ and Hemp switching sides a lot, which I guess is to kind of offer a bit more confusion and stop what is happening maybe with Walsh happening to those other attacking players, not allowing sort of one fullback to feel like they can just double down on a certain player. But I just wonder how much that like midfield imbalance is a result of that attacking, you know, mismatch. Because when you've got players rotating a lot ahead of you and you don't have the time that maybe you get with a club team to really like work on exactly what those rotations are, that obviously makes it harder for those players when you're thinking about progressing the ball to figure out exactly where those players are on the pitch. And I do just feel like having a little bit more structure and attack would maybe just help everyone in that sense.
It also feels frustrating because I don't feel like Lauren James is being played in her best position, but there's obviously a desperate need to want to get her on the pitch, which is fine. But it, at international level, you see this with so many managers where it's a sort of battle between having all the best players on the pitch at once over having them in their best positions. And I feel like Serena Wiegmann's having that sort of mini crisis right now where she's like, oh, Lauren James has to be there because we know what she can do for England, but I'm not going to play her in her best position and I'm going to have to try and rotate to figure out how we use her.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know whether it's just wanting to make up for like certain other deficiencies. Like, do you want LJ playing out wide because you don't feel like she's going to offer enough support from maybe a defensive sense or an out of possession sense in as the 10 in the midfield? I mean, potentially, but then equally you have kind of, you're exposing both of your fullbacks if you believe that. Part of me wondered whether Hemp was playing on the right more to protect Lucy Bronze, because Hemp is such a fantastic exemplar of, you know, a winger doing defensive work. But I don't hate LJ off the wing generally. I just feel like within this England team, we have seen, especially with the focus on Walsh, players, you know, opposition teams really want to focus on shutting down those central areas. So it makes sense to, for me, put more creative players within those areas, especially when England have such a glut of wingers. You know, like by putting LJ out wide, you're basically saying, well, I have to pick just one other of Kelly, Hemp and Mead, which I think makes, for me, I don't know whether that makes it worth it. I thought Clinton was good, but I just think it feels like she's good without being totally exceptional, which is fine. She's a young player still coming into the team. I don't think there's any concern about that. But I don't know, maybe if you're looking at sort of someone like Stanway's performances and Stanway feeling tired and having a lot of games on, it makes more sense to have someone like Clinton as the 8 if you want to have that more sort of solidity and freshness there, and then play LJ as the 10. I mean, Wiegmann's not short of options, and I guess maybe this is partly what makes it so hard to like land on the exact right formula. It's just fascinating, isn't it? Because, you know, the Euros, having an exact formula and sticking with it was what brought England so much success. And now it just feels like we're sort of in a constant rotation game, even during the games themselves.
Yeah, and Becky, the equaliser that Sweden got kind of summed up the way that I think Lucy Bronze was fighting for her life in this game a little bit. Just, I haven't felt super comfortable with her starting as many games as she has for England, even during the Euros. I thought she looked like she was struggling to keep up with the pace of the game and still taking so many risks. And I think that's only really been enhanced the last couple of years. And yeah, she really felt like she struggled in this game. And I know, because she's got so much credit in the bank that Wiegmann is still going to lean on her in games and she's probably going to be the starter. But I don't know when that might change and what will cause it to change. Because at the moment, I'm like, if you see the product on the pitch, you'd think there are other options you could put in there.
I think it's really difficult. I'm very sentimental. She has been such a figure that has been in that England team for so long. And I think it's really difficult to as a fan, be like, it's time for her to move on. But she did look like she was struggling. And it's also, you're playing, also you've let your own teammate in club football, who you know how she works, you shouldn't be giving away a goal really like that. And I it's difficult because I agree, I don't think she looks very strong. And but it, yeah, like I see where Serena is, like, she's got credit in the bank and she's done a lot for England. And I don't know, it's tough to know when to move on. And I think it might be coming, but maybe that's a decision that she has to make. But I don't think she's going to make that either. So I don't know. I don't know what you do about it.
Relatable. Jessie, do you think she's going to see the light at some point and not start Lucy Bronze?
I think, like, that's what's tough, isn't it? Because it's not just the credit in the bank element. It's also that there isn't an obvious other answer. I couldn't sit here and tell you, like, X player deserves to start ahead of Lucy Bronze, like, definitively, because I think anyone you're putting in there is a player who's just not really regularly playing there anyway. So, like, obviously Letizia didn't make the squad, and we know Wiegmann apparently sees her as a right back rather than a right sided centre back. But then the other options you've got, I guess, Esme Morgan, Jess Carter, obviously even Lotte Vermoy's played as a right back in the past, but I don't think any of them are playing, you know, they're either playing as centre backs predominantly at club level, or they're not really playing that much at all in Esme Morgan's case, which then makes it very hard to say. You're not like in a situation with the Rachel Daly left back thing where you've got someone like Niamh Charles, you can say, look, this is someone who plays left back every week for one of the best teams in the country. It's probably time to give her a go. And that's worked out really well, I'd say. With Bronze, what's so tricky is I don't really feel like it's working anymore, or I certainly feel like her deficiencies feel exposed within this England system, but there isn't an obvious other option there which brings anything or, like, obviously improves on that situation. I still would be inclined to put Carter there, especially given, you know, the centre-backs who are available. Williamson's going to start tomorrow in Dublin. So that feels like, you know, an obvious place, especially because, you know, Niamh Charles is someone who is going to push forward and get up. You can naturally have your other fullback sit back potentially more. But I can see why that doesn't feel like the most obvious option to Wiegmann.
Yeah, I personally would go for Carter. And I know, you know, Wiegmann, the way that she works, it doesn't really matter to her whether players are playing that position at club level, because she's happy to kind of throw them in. And I do think out of all the option, Carter looks best there when she has played there. I do think it's just weird that Letizia didn't make the squad in general, if, you know, Wiegmann has shown and been very clear that she is a right back option and that's where she wants her, then to not make the squad, it's all a bit odd there, because then you don't get to see her in that position. And it's, you know, you're taking away those solutions that you yourself thought you had. But I would like to see Carter there. And I think if she can have a few good performances, then she could probably, you know, latch on to that position. And I also think it's that, again, it's that competition for places element. It's frustrating when you feel like someone's not playing that well, but they are that guaranteed name on the team sheet. And I do think there needs to be a little bit more of kind of pressure and competition in order to just see those better performances. And that's hard, I think, if you're an older player, because sometimes that's not going to change. But when you see what someone like Ruben Moyes has been able to do at Arsenal and now get herself actually a place in the England team, which felt like impossible a year ago, I think that proves that even the players who feel like maybe they're not getting seen, if they can put in that consistency, then they could get that opportunity. And I feel like there's someone in that right back position that needs to have that. We've got to talk about Stina Blackstenius having the most Stina Blackstenius moment as per usual, missing incredible one-on-one chance that would have given Sweden a 2-1 win and, yeah, probably made things seriously panic mode for England in their first game of the qualifiers. But Jessie, if there's one thing you can count on with Stina, she's going to give you iconic goals and iconic misses.
Yeah, I mean, it was very classic Stina. Obviously, from Chelsea's perspective, I was like, oh, now you're back to missing these kind of chances, aren't you? But yeah, I mean, I didn't think, I think it's important to say, even within the context of England, I really didn't think Sweden were that impressive either. I thought generally this was like quite a big mid-off from both teams, which I think, again, yeah, will be interesting in the context of the group. And this is kind of the problem, actually, England had with their Nations League group, in that neither England nor the Netherlands were particularly impressive, and Belgium at points looked like they were going to be able to, well, they were able to capitalise on that in terms of individual results. And then obviously you get down to this sort of England versus the Netherlands, who can try and claw back their Nations League campaign the best. And obviously the Netherlands came out on top there. But yeah, I think it will be really, really interesting to see what the France-Sweden game looks like in terms of assessing Sweden, because generally they've blown quite hot and cold over the past couple of months. And I thought they prioritised in this game trying to shore themselves up defensively, because they've been quite open, and it kind of worked, but it really felt like that was their focus, because I really didn't think they generated a huge amount in this match.
They were doing that classic thing that they do with, especially when they play Sina, which is a sort of like kick and run in behind, which worked a few times to create some opportunities, but if you don't take them, that's like all they've got in that moment. Want to move on to the She Believes Cup and bring in our She Believes Cup correspondent, Becky Taylor Gale, who was texting us within that minute that USA conceded against Japan, just saying, she believes, iconic tournament, we love her.
Iconic.
And the most iconic rule of all, Becky, tell us, Gil, about the She Believes updated new rules.
So I didn't know this until I started watching it, and then they said it on commentary, and I was like, whoa, hold up a second. Instead of a round robin, now they just go two semifinals. I don't know how they pick who plays who. Two semifinals, a final and a third place playoff. And I just think that's so much more fun, because a round robin, like, yeah, you get to like see everybody play everybody, but semifinals and a final just feel more exciting. And the most iconic, look, I think that they were like, fuck, the Arnold Clark Cup has come in and it's been the most iconic cult favorite. We need to do something quick to get the people back on side, the She Believes. And so it's straight to penalties. And you know, I love a straight to penalties game. It's just so much better. I don't want to watch half an hour more of you playing. I just want to watch you fight it out. Unfortunately, the first game did not go to penalties, even though Japan scored within 29 seconds, which is just hilarious. Unfortunately, they did not win, but it's still really funny to see the US.
But the second game went to pens. The Canada-Brazil game went to penalties, so we did get it.
Canada living on their one set piece to penalties system, and it works for them.
It is. It does. Don't. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
If you can win an Olympic gold medal like that, why would you change?
Exactly. Exactly. Truly. If you finessed penalty shootout and, you know, negative football, then why change?
It is extremely boring to watch for the first 90 minutes. And then
you get the payoff for the penalties.
Yeah, yeah, and I couldn't find it on American, like, obviously I've got my dodgy fire stick. I could not find it. It was She Believes was on, I can't even remember what channel now. It was really difficult to find. I had it with Portuguese commentary. But that just kind of elevated the situation for me. I really enjoyed it.
I think they've been watching a lot of Conti Cup and realised what really can we pull from the Conti Cup, which is the random straight to penalties format. And actually, I think it's a great idea. USA did manage to pull the game back and beat Japan 2-1. And to be honest, as much as it was, you know, Japan got that early goal, it was one-way traffic after that, and they were clinging on for dear life. And USA had so many chances. I did think it could end up one of those games where I thought it might be 1-1 and then go to penalties. But USA had so many chances, it felt like they were going to find something in the end. And Jaden Shaw, who everyone will know from my brief loving during the Gold Cup is one of the most exciting players, I think, in the US women's national team right now. And she pulled up for the equaliser, a classic textbook Lindsay Horan penalty, because that's all she scores, got the winner for the US. But yeah, Jaden Shaw, Jesse, I love her. I think she's brilliant. I think she's going to have a big end of her sell season as well. But she's now got this unbelievable record as well. She's become the first US player to score a goal in each of her first five starts, which is pretty impressive goal ratio. I think she finished Gold Cup as Golden Boot winner. So yeah, are you as high on Jaden Shaw as I am?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to see her. Obviously, there's no Rose Lavelle in this camp, so it was interesting to see her sort of play in this more like central midfield role. And I feel like the US have been trying to figure out this midfield combo like through the World Cup and into this. And it'll be interesting to see how that develops. I will say, to take nothing away from the shot, which was great, but like, what was the goalie doing? Because yeah, the goalkeeper was not that far in the corner.
The goalkeeper was watching it about 10 seconds on delay.
That's one of those moments where I'm like, even if you didn't see it, I'm sorry, if you're my goalkeeper, I need you to do a pretend dive, because it's much more annoying to just see you stand
there.
She
did. I thought she did do a bit of it. She sort of like fell, but after the fact.
She basically just stands there and looks at it go past her not that far away. But it was a good goal. And yeah, I think obviously for the US as well, it kind of has felt like these games are sort of an opportunity to see lots of those kind of injured players come back into the fold. So Mal Swanson and then Kat Macario getting minutes too. And I think that's going to be really interesting, because you definitely look, when you look at the like number of forwards that the US have, and when the Olympic rosters have to be quite small, like a big name is going to get cut. And it's going to be interesting, I think, to see, you know, who makes that, or whether they like really like go forward heavy on that team. But yeah, like, I mean, I still don't think the US feel like at their most exciting yet. I thought, even though like they had a lot of chances, it felt like Japan kind of handed those chances to them with being quite naive with the way they were sort of trying to play out. But yeah, there's definitely like, I think the ability to like try younger players in new positions is certainly bringing like a sense of freshness to the team, even if it doesn't really feel like it's joined up yet. And then I guess the question is how quickly can that join up before the Olympics?
Yeah, and I think there's some of the same old issues that we saw during the World Cup still there, with the way that they are still kind of having to wait for mistakes, and the build-up play doesn't feel like it's there, and the understanding's not there, and really wasteful with chances as well, which we saw lots during the World Cup. Becky, a bit of a big moment as well, Corbin Albert coming on and getting booed at home in the She Believes. And this has been a really big story, one that started on the internet. And, you know, so often we see in women's football, like conversations and discourse and stuff that only exists on the internet and never actually makes it mainstream. But Megan Rapinoe came out and wrote a statement about it, about Corbin Albert. So if anyone has missed this discourse, Corbin Albert had been sharing some homophobic, transphobic, fairly yikes, uncomfortable content on her, well, been reposting it on her TikTok account, and obviously stupidly didn't think that it would get spotted. It got picked up by some fans, and it was existing on this sort of like, you know, internet level. Then Megan Rapinoe wrote a statement about it, calling it out, and Sam Mewis then shared that on Men in Blazers women's game channel she runs, and Becky Sauerbrunn shared it, and it really, you know, blew up to be a huge women's football story and a huge issue within the US women's national team. Then Alex Morgan and Lindsay Horan had to mention it in their pre-She Believes press conference and said it was being handled internally, but had to reference and talk about it. Then Corbin Albert comes on in the game, the first time she's been seen since this incident with the US team, and is booed. And I feel like, you know, we don't get a lot of booing in women's football sometimes, even though we as a counter-press team encourage more booing.
We'd love to boo.
Pro boo. That's what we believe in.
She believes in booing. But yeah, it felt like, oh, like, you know, something that existed that I felt sometimes in pockets is a serious, you know, fan base wide almost, and player, like, clearly affected the players. And it's going to be interesting, I think, how this conversation continues.
I think for me, what I find frustrating about the whole thing is I think it's really great that Alex Morgan and Lindsay Horan have kind of come out and said, we're handling this, we're aware of it, and there's no space for it in our squad, basically. What I didn't like is Corbin Albert's weird apology, which, look, it's an apology from someone who shared content that is effectively conversion therapy from religious groups. An apology is always going to be difficult to accept, and I'm not saying that I would accept it anyway, but I think her apology is kind of giving, I'm sorry that you are upset, and if you're offended. The fact that she doesn't even mention, she just says, I believe everyone should feel like safe in their in playing football, and actually not mentioning like queer people who are affected by the stuff that you've shared. It just shows to me that you don't understand the levity of what you're talking about. And I think that the US women's national team, as much as I hate on them for fun, I really, really like how they have been extremely vocal in support of queer people in football and trans people. And I think it is just completely against what they have kind of set up as their views and their community. And so I think it's interesting, and I think it will be interesting to see how it plays out. And obviously the fans aren't happy about it, and I think it's good that they were vocal about that. And yeah, we'll see what happens, but I do think it's an interesting one to follow going forward.
I also do think that they, like you say, Becky, because they've always sort of led the way with this, especially Megan Rapinoe's been obviously really outspoken on these issues, and she's still, even though she's not part of the team, sort of holding them to account. I do think they deserve a lot of credit as a group, and a group that is now also predominantly straight as well, for how they do handle these situations and the allies that sit within the team and the role that they take on. And I do think, like, making this a public issue and calling it out and saying that we're going to demand better of a teammate is really impressive, because actually we see all the time, and this is why I was surprised when it took on a level that exists beyond the internet, is we see all the time these things happen with players and what they're sharing and being a bit stupid. And like, we've all done stupid stuff on the internet, but you know, when you move from becoming a role model and the expectation, but also just when people probably don't live up to the expectation, or when people don't actually call them out or hold them to account on their views. And I think this was an important case when actually people did step up outside the team and inside the team and say, we're not going to accept that, rather than, I think we see so many other teams, and I don't, you know, so few people in the Lionesses these days actually are vocally supportive of very much. And that's fine. You know, they don't have to be, but I think, you know, there's individuals like Lotta Womoy and Leah Williamson at times who've been very outspoken on various things and been, you know, key on big issues. But I think the US team have really led the way on kind of rising standards for women's sport across the board. And I don't think you'd see many other teams sort of putting pressure on a teammate and their behaviour. I think most people would just sort of look at the floor and shrug and say, oh, like, our team has a bit of a wrong and what can you do? So I think they do deserve a little bit of credit as well for how they've handled that.
Oh, for sure. I think that they've handled it really well. I think that also comes from being a super successful team with a huge history and the ability to feel like I can talk about this and I can call it out because I feel very secure in my position in this team, in my position as a footballer in this country, that maybe other teams such as Lionesses don't have.
Yeah, totally. All right, well, that's enough She Believes chat. We will still never know what she believes, but if anyone knows what she does, in
but
fact,
I believe. Do you believe?
I think I believe, yeah. I think I believe. Jesse, do you believe?
I'm not sure if I believe. Sorry.
Wow. Huge breaking news. Sorry, anyway, guys. Let's talk about the other big story of the weekend, the NCAA Women's Championship game. For one day and one day only, the timeline was united in all becoming women's basketball fans. I've never seen so much interest in the UK, and this kind of includes men's basketball because I know with time difference and everything, it's hard to sort of tap in. But still, with I've just never seen the conversation unite the way it did. It was really fun and exciting to see so many people engaged in it.
There's nothing better than watching a big sporting event with Twitter. It's just the greatest.
It's what it was built for.
It's fun.
Yeah, yeah, it's the best. And I feel like we don't get much of that anymore because the app itself is a bit rubbish. And, you know, so many people are watching so many different football games. So I feel like it's rare that you feel like everyone's tuned in at once. But this really was just everyone tweeting and talking about the basketball. And Becky, I know you were really leaning into your like basketball era, finding some cute rom-com novels as well.
There's two different ones. One based on a coach and a coach of a kids team and another parent. And then there's one which I think is my preference. Player, cheerleader, iconic.
Love that. That's a great rom-com.
Yeah. Yeah. As someone that really enjoyed One Tree Hill in my youth and loved it, I need a lesbian version.
I would love, a reboot. A One Tree Hill lesbian reboot right now would go down a treat.
Hey, Sophia Bush, you can come back.
Oh, shit.
I didn't think about that. I didn't actually think about that. Jesse, we just talked about Corbin Albert and the gross misstep she had over the past couple of weeks. And then you kind of see on the flip side, someone like Dawn Staley, who is head coach of South Carolina, who one of the teams playing in this college final, who had to answer a classic, question, which was nothing actually to do with the event. But obviously these things always get thrown in at people before major sports events. And, you know, it wasn't one that she probably maybe expected to ask at that point, but she was asked around trans athlete inclusion in sport. And, you know, she wholeheartedly said she supports any trans athlete who wanted to take part. If a trans woman wanted to, you know, play in basketball, she would fully support them. And it was a really amazing juxtaposition to what I think had been happening the week before with Corbin Albert, but also across the sports landscape, you know, for the past few years, which we've talked about in some of our episodes, whether it was like Caster Semenya or talking about football v transphobia stuff with Natalie Washington. Like, I feel like it's rare that we see those nice positive news stories where you've got someone who is so high profile, such a beloved and amazing figure within sport, being so publicly supportive of that. And it was an amazing way to kind of warm up for this event. And everyone was kind of Team Dawn after that. I mean, everyone kind of is already, but...
Yeah, I mean, you guys said you just wanted basketball to win, which is lame, because what is the point of watching sport if you're not hating on one team, rooting for the other? And so I picked South Carolina because of Dawn Staley. And so I'm now one from one on basketball championship backing teams.
Well, so am I, because I wanted basketball to win and it did, so.
True, same.
It's very, what a great day for women's football though, isn't it, guys? So.
Yeah, obviously.
But yeah, I think the NCAA have some questions to answer on the outlet that was like able to ask that question, because they seem like quite extremist light. And I don't really understand like why you're in a position like ahead of this game to ask that kind of question. But I think, yeah, it's so refreshing just to see someone be like, yeah, I believe trans women should play women's sport. Like, that's basically all I've got to say about the topic. And I think it just shows also how effective it can be to shut down those conversations in that sense, because sometimes I feel like people want to give this like laborious thought out answer that like justifies their position, but I feel like that often just like enables people to like try and pick it apart more. But yeah, it was super refreshing, super cool to see. And look, you support trans women in sport, you win things. It's a foolproof scheme.
One from one. And yeah, like you say, it's a great way to almost just like shut down the conversation, but like it's a very full stop answer, like yes and next kind of thing.
I really liked how she was like, and now they're gonna come for me, and that's what you want, and I'm okay with that. Like, it's really like, I'm not afraid of you, like, get over it.
Yeah, she is such an iconic person with her Louis Vuitton and Gucci outfits, and you know, her players love her. She creates such an amazing kind of family environment, and players desperately want to play for her and perform so well for her. And that, I think, shows about what it means to be a great leader, a great coach. She's now won 3 championships to go with her 3 Olympic gold medals that she won as a player. She, you know, played at the highest level as well. She's got an amazing story. And yeah, I think we need these kind of fairy tales. As much as I admire the individual brilliance of Caitlin Clark as an athlete, I think she's an unbelievable athlete. You just watch her technique, her skill, phenomenal. The fairy tale in some ways, it's not a fairy tale in terms of like a David versus Goliath, because South Carolina are unbelievable. They were undefeated this entire season, but it's more the sort of good feeling and good energy that surrounds that team. And what Dawn Staley means to her players is this kind of, you know, amazing figure and support system. And Becky's new fave, Cardoso, 6'4" Brazilian. Icon.
6'7", Flo.
6'7", sorry. 6'7", Camila Cardoso, who, yeah, what an icon.
She's so tall. It's so funny when she gets the rebound, because it's like, yeah, babe, of course.
That is basketball, though. Becky's like, wow, these women are so tall. Wow.
Yeah, but 6'7", like,
no,
come
it's
on.
Tall. It's tall.
That's exceptionally tall.
I love her. She's great.
I always think when I see the people like that, though, I'm like, I'm 5'3". Imagine me next to her. It would look,
oh my God, that'd
so,
be so
funny. And Jessie as well. Me and Jessie next
Flo
to her.
If me and Flo were on each other's shoulders in a big coat, we'd probably still be shorter.
It's so funny to think about. But
yeah. I really liked, there was a moment where she went to take a shot and an Iowa player blocked it. And the Iowa player kind of afterwards was like, oh my God, like, what the hell? How did I do that? She's like a foot shorter than her.
Yeah, that it must be so hard to play against her, because wherever she is, she's probably going to win that battle when you're trying to jump and get the ball. And yeah, can't wait to see more of them, like, you know, absolutely shine. Caitlin Clark and Camila Cardoso are both going to WNBA, so people will be able to see them play professional very soon.
I just need to mention that 1 3-pointer from Caitlin Clark in the first quarter, where it's like, why are you even thinking, I'm gonna shoot from here? It's so far back and it's just perfect, like, doesn't even hit the rim. She's so good.
She did kind of go too soon, didn't she, though?
Like, yeah, she did. 18 points.
18 points
was
amazing.
Yeah.
But then, like, you were like, oh no, she kind of used it all up.
You gotta pace yourself.
Well, they figured out, they figured out how to defend her after that first quarter. Raven Johnson doing an amazing job from South Carolina to do that. So it became harder and harder. But then she does this thing where, you know, obviously because she makes so many incredible shots from really far out, then she'll keep trying.
It was giving Lauren James. I was like, honey, sometimes you can't just pass.
I did see that tweet, I think, from Men in Blazers, which was like, who's the WOSO equivalent of women of Caitlin Clark? And it does have to be Lauren James, because until now, I think Lauren James has got better at defending in recent weeks, but Caitlin Clark does not defend. She takes a ton of crazy shots, a lot of which she makes. And I do think there is some, you know, it feels like she's very much a generational talent. Lauren James is up there. So yeah, there's an obvious link. So Lauren James, take more shots, actually. Channel your inner Caitlin Clark. You can do it.
When is the WNBA draft? 15th of April. I will be there no matter what. I can't wait. I'm in it now.
Who are you going to support, Becky?
I don't know, actually. I'll have to have a look. The only ones that I know are that... Actually, Flo sent me the funniest or she sent it to both of us, the funniest video of the elephant mascot for New York, and Flo was like, she's kind of slutty, and I was like, do not slut shame this mascot. And then I watched the video and I was like, oh no.
Yes, slutty. She is slutty.
The way that she like swings her tail around, like, ooh.
I'm obsessed with her.
Yeah, she's iconic. So I think I'm all in on being a New York Liberty fan. So sorry, it's basic because it's a New York team, but I'm doing it.
Do San Diego have a team?
No, don't think so.
Because I could really like just become a San Diego women's sports fan.
Yeah, you could do it.
Who's the nearest? I mean, I guess
Las Vegas Aces.
The Aces are very good. The Aces, that I feel like you can't pick the team that's won the last two championships.
Not? San Diego Wave. So yeah, but that's clearly what she's going for. Yeah, they have won. What matters, bro?
I'm not going to get into that discourse now. You could be, I mean, there's an LA team if you want to still stay West Coast.
Maybe.
Or if you want to go all in on Caitlin Clark, you could go Indiana Fever, which is going to be her team.
Is that where she's going?
Yeah, they've got the number one pick.
I'll have a look. Also need to see who's got like a cool vibe, cool city, a cool kit. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes more than one thing. But if people do want to see Ellie content, Ellie is the elephant that is the New York Liberty mascot. Incredible dancer, incredible woman. We stan.
Slut.
do not slut shame the elephant, please. You can find her on TikTok and Instagram, and that content is well worth watch.
I mean, in a week where the QPR mascot has allegedly been let go for trying to chat up people, I mean, it feels like a big week for mascots on teams flow support.
It feels like a big week for flirty mascots, I'll tell you that much. We won't talk about Jude the Cat and what he allegedly has been accused of doing. But anyway.
Jude the Cat is cancelled.
Jude the Cat could be cancelled.
Very much so.
We don't know. Anyway, Becky, I'll see you on Thursday. I'll be back. But Jesse, I won't see you because you're going to be off to the East Coast to run the Boston Marathon. So good luck.
Thanks, guys.
Oh my gosh, good luck.
And I'm sure, we'll be posting updates on Count Press Twitter and send us your tracking number so everyone can get behind you.
Also, send me your flight tracking for your flight number so I can track you there as well.
I will do that for you, Becky.
Not quite as exciting as when you had to stop in Taipei Airport, but I'd still like to keep track.
Okay.
Becky will keep an eye just in case. You never know. You never know. All right, guys. Yes, we'll be back on Thursday. So we'll see you then.